Are you not going to give me any advance warning of what the gist of these?
Hold on. This is Mame Warren. Today is the 20th of May, 1996, where I'm in Lexington, Virginia with Neil McKenzie. We're on. You're on. What attracted you to Washington and Lee in the first place?
I was drawn here by a concatenation of accidents and sort of coincidences in which I thought I discerned fate's hand beckoning me hither. I will say that I was possessed of a very different social and political outlook from the one I deem honorable nowadays, and that less honorable outlook in my late teens contributed to my my decision to apply here.
Can you be a little more specific about that? I mean, we could interpret that all kinds of ways, Neil.
Well, I would almost prefer to leave that answer up to the beholder's interpretive capabilities. That way, any interpretation would be, you know, inherently dubious. Since
all right.
Let me say that I was charmed by the sort of southern self-congratulation that seemed to exist here, and some of the politicized traditions that seemed from afar to exist here. When I was applying to this college, I was charmed by those appearances in a way that I might not be charmed by the same appearances any longer. Thanks, I would say, to the education that I received at Washington and Lee.
And how did you find out about it in the first place?
Just flipping through one of those, you know, those telephone book-like college guides that one plucked from newsstands even as far away as Canada, which was the setting of this flip through. The book happened to fall open upon Washington Lee. I read it. I was intrigued. That night, or a night not too long after that, I was on the phone with a cousin of mine who was then a freshman at Hollins. I knew that she was a freshman at a school called Hollins. I knew nothing about, really specific about Hollins' location, nor anything at all about Hollins' association with W&L. But on the phone, she happened to toss out some passing question as to where was I thinking of going to college, since it was around that time in my life. And I mumbled something about Washington Lee, whereupon she exploded in enthusiasm. So that's a sort of coincidence, which you know, coincidences like that began to snowball. Therein, I thought fortune was attempting to tell me something. There were a few others, but I won't trouble you with them.
Oh, I find them very enchanting.
I did. There was one man who had died by the time I was applying to colleges, but whom I had known into my teenage years, who was a husband of my mother's best friend, who was he was an architect, very prominent architect in New England, and we learned after I started looking at Washington Lee that this gentleman had gone to Washington Lee as an undergraduate, and the fact that he was remembered by me then and continues to live in my memory as one of the courtliest, most genial and decent and brave men I've ever known. This strengthened my favorable impression of W&L.
So you applied, and what was your first impression when you came here? Did you come for a visit before you decided to come here?
I came here I visited Lexington sort of drove around the school and whatnot for, couldn't have been more than a couple of hours, when I was, before I had registered my application, I think, before I had lodged my application, but sometime in there, within, you know, within 12 months, let us say, before December 1988, I made an appearance here in Lexington and sort of reconnoitered the place. Then after I applied, one day in February or March of 1989, I was at a friend's house and the phone rang. I picked up to hear my mother on the other end telling me that she had just received a telephone call from Mimi Elrod at Washington Lee. Mimi was inviting me for an honor scholarship interview. I think I've got that story wrong. I think when the phone rang at my friend's house that afternoon, it was not my mother, but it was Mimi herself. My mother had given her the phone number. And so Mimi rang my friend's house in Canada, where I was lying around unsuspectedly, you know, drinking a beer or something. And so it was Mimi exuding all the graciousness and charm which one associates with Mimi. She invited me to an honor scholarship interview. It just involved, you know, free plane ticket and all that. So I came down here and spent two or three days being interviewed and participating in all sorts of, no doubt, intensely scrutinized panel discussions and whatnot. I liked it very much. And I, in fact, was offered I dare say, a princely scholarship as the sequel to that weekend of interviews. The school's generosity, scholarship-wise, was a weighty factor in my decision to come here.
Who participated in the interviews, and what was that process like?
Well, thrown into the whole weekend was just a straight admissions interview over in the, you know, the admissions house with, I guess, two. It was sort of a two-on-one thing. Two regular admissions officers conducting what purportedly was just the usual admissions interview format. That seemed a bit superfluous, given the school had just flown us all down there, right? So we figured that we at least were in. The rest of the weekend, on the first night, I recall meeting Ladd Sessions, who was my first advisor here, now a dean of the university, I believe, then a very popular philosophy professor. He and, I must remember the gentleman's name, Lou Hodges, an ethics expert and gunsmith, I am told, conducted this sort of large group discussion on a very difficult ethical question that was pressing upon the social conscience at that time, or was promising to impress itself upon the social conscience at that time. And so they seemed to be, you know, probing our weaknesses then. Perhaps I'm being too cynical about the extent to which we were under observation through all this. I certainly felt very much like a would-be courtier at Versailles who is desperately trying to remember all the lessons of politesse and how to bow and scrape before the king in hopes that he would receive a small court appointment. I remember that group discussion. There was an interview done, a special honors scholarship interview done in an office in the basement of the C School. Several offices were being used for this purpose that night, in each of which offices there were, I think, three Washington Lee professors. And so of the group of us, there were at least 20 of us candidates there that weekend, probably more than that. So we weren't all, I mean, each of us was only interviewed by one trio of professors. Among mine was Ed Cron, who went on to become one of my favorite, most influential teachers here. I blush to admit I can't recall offhand who the other two were. There was another daytime panel discussion in which a politics professor was involved. And that is as far as the sort of formal tests of our quickness on the draw went that weekend.
Were they geared to, at that point, were you asked to what your area of interest was going to be? Or was it just random what kind of professors were doing this interviewing?
I can't recall whether the professors into whose presences we were ushered were professors who necessarily had anything to do with what area of interest that we were indicating a tendency to lean toward. So I'm sorry, I can't shed any light on that question. I don't recall being harried about my interests and my projections for my own future. Fortunately enough, because those are questions which I can, to which I can still only stammer incoherently in response. These interviews were much more, were designed much more just to explore our general manner and intelligence, in as far as intelligence can be measured by such superficial encounters.
And how many of you who came that weekend actually came to Washington and Lee?
I think this was not the only such weekend. I think there were at least two weekends, perhaps two weekends in a row in which this was done. And I think when Mimi rang me, I was sort of offered the opportunity to select a weekend best suited to my schedule. At that weekend, as I say, there were two dozen or maybe more of us, well, in around there somewhere. Three of whom, at least two of whom, went on to come, in addition to myself, went on to appear at Washington Lee my freshman year. One of them became a very good friend of mine, and the another I knew quite well. And there was a third who this third person, a specific person I have in mind, who's certainly in my class at WNL, and I think he was there that weekend too, but that could be a trick of memory. I'm not sure.
What about, it sounds like it was very rigorous academically that weekend, what about socially? Did they try to introduce you to what the social life is like here while you were here?
They did. Well, we were, we were put up in dorm rooms by freshmen or maybe dorm counselors. Anyway, we were put up in the freshman dorm buildings.
At Gaines?
No, that is upperclassmen housing. I was in a room in the Graham Lees complex where I ended up living my undergraduate year, much to my delectation. A wonderful place to live. And so we had this sort of anchor in the student body that weekend, or if anchor is a word, we had a tie to the student body. I socialized, if that is the correct verb, a little bit with my my host, whose name I recall and who is a decent guy. There was a comedian, a very high profile, big name, sort of MTV frequenting comedian, who was appearing in the Warner Center, one of these buildings. I went to that. I went to a couple of fraternity parties. It all became quite sociable, really. I mean, a group of us, rivals for honor scholarships, were able to put aside our stilettos long enough to enjoy each other's company and to sort of go from fraternity to party to fraternity party. And indeed, I must say, the WNL students whom I encountered were enormously magnanimous in their showy hospitality and whatnot when we sort of stumbled upon fraternity parties. I suppose it had something to do with wanting to sink, you know, their teeth into perspectives early for rush-type purposes and the endless competition among fraternity houses. But whatever motive lay behind it, the world is governed by deeds and not motives, and many a good deed was paid us that weekend.
So you came?
Yes.
So tell me about arriving as a freshman.
Well, being a Canadian, I was I was designated a foreign student. Correctly enough, I suppose. But this sort of got me into all sorts of affiliations with students from various third world countries and whatnot who were thought to require special treatment to become oriented, I think is a phrase, at Washington Lee. And so I was invited down early. Most freshmen were told to arrive on, you know, day X. I was asked to arrive on day X minus 5 or something to take part in these special orientation programs. Not solely designed for foreign students. It was sort of every foreign student was invited, and then there were a sprinkling of kind of regular Americans who were invited to help, you know, in the so many sort of newfangled anthropologies words are entering this soliloquy, but the sprinkling of real Americans was added to help in the acculturation process. So there were a couple of straight Americans there, some of whom remained friends of mine for the duration of the WNL thing. I only went really because after a phone call with one of the coordinators of this program, I was let in on the useful knowledge that this would give me a chance to take care of post office boxes and bank accounts and what have you before the rush. So I came and participated in these things. It was useful to get sort of a foretaste of Lexington life, and I think they took us down to the mall in Roanoke on one occasion. All good fun. You know, I can't recall how my social life got going. It got going swiftly enough. I mean, I went out to various women's colleges and did sort of social things with some of the young men whom I met through this preliminary orientation scheme affair. But that became marginalized very quickly. I mean, my memory of my earliest block of friends at Washington Lee were my fellow pledges in a fraternity I ended up pledging. Them and a few people on my hall in Graham Lee's who remained good friends of mine. But what drew me to that fraternity and how I sort of fell in with that group of people, not the people in my hall, how I fell in with them is obvious, but the others, is entirely submerged, neath memories, oily, slick. I have no idea what happened.
Well, it's been a while.
Yeah.
So, this whole feeling, I'm really looking forward to when the freshmen arrive in the fall so that I can sort of go through this with them and see what it feels like and see what they do. Once upon a time, and I'm not quite sure when it stopped, they did something called freshman camp. I presume that was long since over by the time you got here?
Unless they revived it, I think that's right. Nothing of the kind occurred during my years here, so far as I know. I'm aware of the idea. Other colleges to which I applied had such a thing going on, and I know of other colleges that do this.
And what year was it you got here? 89?
Yeah.
Okay, so that was the year the first class of women were graduating. Were you aware of that? Was this the sense that women were still new here? Was that real by the time you came? Or were they taken for granted as
being here? I arrived in late August of 1989. The first woman had graduated the previous June.
Mm-hmm.
I met at least, more than one of them. I met a handful of them. The honor scholarship competition weekend I mentioned. One of them drove me from the airport and back to the airport. And I became better acquainted with her and acquainted with others in the course of the weekend in between those two airport drives. They were all interesting women, really, as indeed have been most of the women I've known at Washington Way. There was a lingering, awareness of the fact that women are new here, mostly in the form of, it's just sort of rhetorical reflexes that fraternity students would fall into in their kind of misogynist arrogance. There was, to an extent, a somewhat ghettoized mentality among many of the women I've known at Washington Lee. It persisted until through to the end of my senior year, and very likely persists to this day.
Do you think that's because it's Washington and Lee, or do you think that's the times?
I think the fact that it is Washington Lee colors that mentality in a way that renders it unique among communities of ghettoized, harried women across the country. Certainly, this is a bad time to be a woman in the United States. It's a bad time to be anything but a more than usually fortunately born white straight male in the United States. But at Washington and Lee, the character of one's sort of self-conscious alienation, if one is a woman here, I suspect, I mean, it's my impression, the character of that alienation is shaped by sort of things peculiar to Washington Lee's social life and Washington Lee's history.
And why do you think it's peculiar? Tell me what you think is unique about Washington Lee's social life.
Well, few other, few all-male colleges in the land can have had five. The number, I think, is five. Let me just review it in my head. Yes, five. Private women's colleges, all within roughly an hour's drive radius, give or take. And the old structure of Washington Lee social life, which was, a continual sort of sloshing back and forth of boozy students between these schools, in which Washington Lee was very obviously and unabashedly the planet, right, with all the gravity in the other schools, with the sort of satellites that existed to set off the planet handsomely in the map of the heavens. That tradition of women, sort of bussing themselves in here, bred a great deal of arrogance, which has not been cleansed from the Washington Lee, the collective mentality of Washington Lee manhood, a great deal of arrogance indeed, and, you know, a certain blasé attitude about matters of date rape, and generally a very sort of primitive view of proper relations among the genders.
So, were you this aware while you were in the middle of it?
I think I was this aware when I was a student. I did not... I tiptoed away from the middle, I think, during my student years. Certainly, I, as a student, I never had a perfectly detached view of these matters. As a very wistful and nostalgic alumnus, I still cannot lay claim to a perfectly detached, the legendary objective view is not mine. But yes, as a student, especially as a student who is spending a great deal of his time in the company of women at Washington and Lee, and women of a more than usually higher grade intellectually and politically at Washington Lee. Spending a lot of time, as I did, in the company of such women, one could not escape being made aware of faces of reality here, which tended to wear a mask when one was inside a fraternity house, consuming beer via a funnel, and doing backflips off mantles and other amusements which keep us off the streets.
Well, those of us who are on the streets are grateful.
Rightly so.
Well, I had an interesting conversation with a very thoughtful student last week, and one of the things he said was that it's just extremely stressful to be, especially an upper-class woman here, because her social life is almost non-existent, at least with Washington and Lee men. Is that the kind of thing you're alluding to?
I have heard that said. It has, I must say, it has not been my experience. Upper-class women at Washington Lee are at a disadvantage, certainly, if a disadvantage you choose to call it, in that in terms of the amount of attention which is showered upon them by Washington Lee men, compared with the amount of attention which Washington Lee men shower upon freshman women and women from the neighboring women's colleges. There is an imbalance there. But I never... Well, most of the Washington Lee women I knew well in my years here were not by no means isolated and lonely and despairing. They seemed to me to have fulfilling lives. One hears a lot of this talk, this sort of self-pitying thing coming from Washington Lee students who have not quite fit the mold of the archetypical Washington Lee student. You know, various socialists and people with long hair and... you know, people who like poetry and people of unorthodox sexual enthusiasm. There's this sort of ragged fringe of such students at Washington Lee, a fringe in which I spent a great deal of time, passed a great many high-spirited hours. And every once in a while, people who are exiled or have exiled themselves to this fringe will wax self-pitying. They'll sort of moan about how oh, how homogenous it is here and how lonely it is for them. And after listening to this for, you know, a few minutes, when they run out of breath, one will ask them, well, you know, how many friends do you have here? Just, you know, within the student body, you know, people whom you go and have dinner with and slug down a bottle of wine with and, you know, have recreational sex with. You know, what's your sort of, what is the size of the core of your social circle? And without fail, they will give some, you know, offhandedly, they'll attempt some figure between 7 and 15 or something. And my question is, what do these people want? I mean, do they think they would have a larger core number of friends at NYU or something? I mean, interpersonal dynamics. Such a forbidding phrase. The way people interact with each other has a logic that tends to keep the numbers of, you know, the size of close circles of friends at about that number. And so the answer is, certainly in my years here, there was enough diversity at Washington Lee to accommodate practically any social point of view of which I'm aware of, you know, after the end of a life of keen observation of deviant points of view. This is a many-colored tapestry. No matter how uniform it may look at first glance.
I wonder if that sense of having a small circle of friends comes from the contrast of the fraternity system, where you look at these houses that seem to be these monstrous units of friends.
Well, yeah, perhaps contemplation of you know, a house full of, you know, these blocks of 80 or 60 brothers. Contemplation from afar may feed a person's sense that they are isolated, if they want to sustain that sense. If they crept any nearer the fraternity system, I think they would find that impression of you know, battalions of good friends unjustified. I myself was a member of a fraternity, and from the from inside the bowels of that system, one is under no illusion about the solidarity of these fraternity houses. I mean, each fraternity house has its pockets of little groups of friends, 7 to 15 people in number each. And there's often a good deal of, I mean, there is amicability among these pockets, usually, not always. But the fraternity system is not created, it's not, fraternities have not invented some new paradigm for human interaction, which has widened the spectrum of intimacy in a way that thousands of years of social evolution have been unable to do.
I bet from the outside, though, if you're feeling left out, I bet it looks a lot more golden than it probably is. But,
well, that may well be so.
Especially if you tried to get in and didn't.
I never spent a great deal of time in the company of people who idolized the fraternity system and yet were unable to worm their way inside it. I suspect there are not many such people. There's a fraternity here that'll... There are fraternities here that will take just about any quality of candidate. Certainly, I mean, some of them are so desperate for survival in the new fraternity regime that, you know, they'll reach very very far down the barrel indeed. I knew very few people who were not in fraternities at Washington Lee who really rued not being in fraternities. Most of the people I knew who were not in fraternities and who said anything about not being in fraternities, I'm talking about men, were given a sort of a rhetorical posture of contempt for the fraternity situation. And that an attitude of contempt towards fraternities would be very difficult to reconcile with an attitude of self-pity about not having as large a block of friends as the average brother in a fraternity house.
So were you in the fraternity all 4 years?
No, I withdrew at the end of my sophomore year with no acrimony. I remained very good friends with the brothers in my house, and I continued to carry on a fairly colorful social life under the aegis of that house.
And so where did you choose to live then?
Well, I had never lived in a fraternity house, actually. I lived in Gramley's dorm in my freshman year, as I have noted. Thereafter, I lived in town, privately rented accommodations in town. Two different sets of them. My sophomore year, I lived in one place. My junior and senior years, I lived in a different place. One place for both of those. I spent 2 years in one place. Loved it. Those were great 2 years.
So while we're still on somewhat social things, let's finish that series of questions. Fancy dress? Was fancy dress important to you?
I never failed to go to fancy dress, and I never failed to have a splendid time.
Tell me about
there.
It.
There.
Take me to fancy dress. Tell me about it.
Mame, I may take you up on that, literally. All years but my senior year. What could it have been? Yes, that's right. All years but my senior year, I participated in fancy dress as a full-fledged fraternity worker bee, participating in all the rituals, and enjoying the hell out of them. Although, well, allow me to hedge. My junior year, I was dating a dance major from one of the nearby colleges. She did not quite fit the pigeonhole of stereotypical fraternity guys. Date. So that fancy dress weekend was rather off kilter in a charming way from a mindless fraternity participant's point of view. But in general, those first three fancy dresses were weekends full of nonstop, prodigious, Viking-like consumption of alcohol and the wreckage of these poor tuxedos which had never done anything to offend one, and all sorts of exuberantly reckless sexual behavior. Great fun, really. Never having Being kind of a shirker by nature, I didn't quite get into the unifying force which gathered within each fraternity house as fancy dress approached and as elaborate measures had to be taken and hundreds of hours of real sweat off the brow labor had to be
doing what?
Covering fraternity houses in sawdust. I mean, so that to make a plausible desert island setting for a certain party. Things like that. I mean, hauling bamboo, you know, lifting kegs, all sorts, setting up quite a great deal of work. Generally, I contrive to sit in a director's chair, such as the one to my right, and sort of give instructions and sip on a mint julep. And so few students at any other college in the United States can be said, can say that in their college days they took their ease with a mint julep in hand. But at Washington and Lee, it is not an eyebrow-raising statement.
Yes, I actually went to fancy dress this year, and my husband kept looking around and saying, were they all born in country clubs? I've never seen so many beautiful people who are so at ease in tuxedos. It was quite a do.
Yeah, there was, I mean, however many lamentations one hears about, you know, from certain sectors of the Washington Lee student body, shrinking sectors, it would seem, of the Washington Lee student body, and certain ever more indignant sectors of the Washington Lee alumni community. However many lamentations one hears from these people about the decline of Washington Lee from a really kind of uniquely Southern institution into just sort of, you know, another face in the crowd of private liberal arts colleges, each trying to attain the cachet of, oh, what school has enviable cachet? I don't know. Middlebury, no. Bowdoin, I don't know. We don't feel inferior to any of these places, but however many lamentations one hears about how indistinguishable we are coming from these places, there remains a great deal that is durably unique here. And it is not, I mean, these aspects of Washington Lee life are not just cant that are spewed forth by nostalgic old-timers. I recall reading a piece by William Styron, in which Styron was reminiscing about a tour of Virginia campuses which his father took him on late in his teenage years. Although William and Mary was very close to where Styron lived, William and Mary was written off at once because of a prevailing air of intellectual fatuousness, in Styron Sr.'s phrase, which Styron Sr. said had prevailed at William and Mary since the establishment of Phi Beta Kappa in 1776. Other campuses were visited, each was dismissed with acerbic commentary such as that. Washington Lee was instantly bewitching to the young Styron, but for the very reasons which caused Styron Sr. to drag his son away in disgust. And he described the sort of ocean of seersucker and mint juleps, and this kind of self-consciously aristocratic air of smugness and contentment about the place, which are as endearing to those of us who have some foothold in it, as no doubt these aspects are appalling and infuriating to those who remain outside, either voluntarily or because they've had the door shut in their face.
I need to turn the tape over.